Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed Podcast, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 414. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. I have a wonderful guest with me in the Tool Shed this week. He is the co-founder and executive editor at Just Baseball Media, host of the Call Up Pod and the Just Baseball Show. At RM Layton number 8 on Twitter, Mr. RM Layton joins me. RM, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's been a fun season, and we were just chatting before we started recording here. How's the season going for you so far? It's been a long haul, but we got a week left of the season and the postseason. How are things for you?
It's crazy because, I was just talking to my mom about it. She's like, oh, so it'll be winding down for you. I'm like, not really, because especially for, I know you can relate to this as well. Like, when we get to October, I love October. Of course, you get playoff baseball and the Arizona Fall League. But the combination of those two things kind of creates some chaos. And so I'm still trying to master the best way to cover the Fall League and the playoffs at the same time. I still haven't fully figured that out. I'm hoping to make some more progress this year. But it's funny, September ends up being a little bit more of the easier month compared to October. And then I think November, I plan to disappear for a week or something like that. But it's been awesome. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, you said it before, like, we get to talk about baseball. And so I absolutely love doing that. And very pumped for the Fall League this year, too. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And then the playoffs, man, it's wide open. I think, you could pretty much make a case for anybody. So we got a lot of fun things ahead.
Right. I think the most exciting player I'm waiting to see in the Fall League, and I feel like I saw you tweet about this too, Daniel Espino, finally back on the mound in game action, pitched on Saturday, just for a couple outs, give up a few runs, but man, wasn't it fun to see him back on in game action after being out for what is like 3.5 years now?
I started to wonder, I mean, we all did, right, if it was ever going to happen, and especially right. When it's shoulder, right? There was that. With Andrew Painter, it was just a timing thing, but it was so exciting to see Andrew Painter in the Fall League, because trying to put off the surgery and then ultimately getting the surgery set it up to where the timing was 2+ years of not seeing him throw, but you still felt really good that Andrew Painter was going to come back and be able to throw. With Espino, once you got the second notification about the shoulder surgery, I think collectively everybody said, oh, I don't know what this is going to look like, right? I mean, we saw Sixto Sanchez come back and, just fully be a shell of himself. I was worried about that, but it's just so awesome. You saw the emotion from him coming off the mound, and I can't wait to watch him throw. I've heard nothing but great things about who he is as a person too. So easy to root for, but I mean, it's easy to forget that this guy had some of the best stuff in the minor leagues, period, before. So even if he's 70% of what he was, and I'm hoping he's 100%, but even if he's 70% of what he was, that's a damn good pitcher that's going to have a nice big league career. So I'm just hoping he can stay healthy.
Oh, for sure. And it was like, he was like the one of the big three of the, you know, former top pitching prospect that we just haven't seen barely at all in the last couple of years. You know, him, Matt Allen with the Mets, and then Brendan McKay with the Tampa Bay Rays. So it was like those three guys, I think right around the same time, were all like top 10 or so pitching prospects, or at least, you know, close to it. And then this, you know, one injury after the other stacked up, and, you know, and then they're just out for long periods of time. I think McKay is still prospect eligible, I'm pretty sure. I think he's still like 49. I think it's like 49 two-thirds innings or something, like right under that 50-inning threshold, which is crazy. But, yeah, it was great to see Espino come back yesterday on Saturday. And, yeah, also incredibly excited to see him and many others. McGonagall is a pretty loaded AFL group this year, so it'd be fun to get out there and get some more baseball in the dead of the offseason. But, we had a lot of fun players to talk about today. We'll do a little Miami Marlins talk some recent prospect debuts. But before we get into all of that, you know, the usual housekeeping. Again, you can find me at Eric Cross MLB. Arm is at Arm Leighton 8. That's ARAMLEIGHTON, the number 8. And you can find all my content on Rotoballer or on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. And make sure you check out all of the great content over on Rotoballer with Rotoballer's Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our Premium Pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout. All right, we got a trio of pitchers and a trio of hitting debuts here over the last, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks or so. We'll start with Connelly Early with the Boston Red Sox, who I saw earlier this year in Double A. He was fine, but I did not expect him to be this impressive through his first three major league outings. 10 in the third innings. I know it is first two. I don't know why it says three game start here, but 10 in the third innings, 18 strikeouts, 0.87 ERA so far for Early. It's been both of those against the Athletics, which are a pretty good offense at this point in time. So what have been your thoughts on Early so far, Arm, and then what do you think he can be long-term?
I mean, it's been really fun to watch. He's clearly a talented arm that saw an uptick this year. And it was, you know, I think, really elevating him going into this year, even being able to get some looks at him in spring training, but he got better as the year progressed. And I think what we saw in those first two big league starts was, and the last couple of Triple-A starts, was just how good this guy can be when he's executing everything, because the stuff is good. I don't think it's off the charts, but he's taken it from pretty good to, I think, very good at times stuff wise. The fastball now can set the tone instead of being a pitch that he needed to mask. And then off of that, you've got the change up, the slider, the curveball, all working off of it. And even a sinker that will work in a little bit as well. And I go back to that first start watching that one. What stood out to me is the way that the fastball would then set up everything else. So he'd go fastball and set up the tunnel. Then the change up would work off of it. Then the same thing with the slider and the curveball, but sometimes being able to work on those two pitches, you know, working off of each other, hard slider down to Rooker, and then he goes curveball off of that. That just starts at the same spot and darts below it. So it seems like he's really started to figure out how to sequence and how to utilize this improved arsenal. And I know third time out, I think as we're recording this, he's throwing right now, and it was a little bit of a command battle. And we've seen that a couple times this year where when he gets out of sorts, you'll start to see the command wane. But when he's in rhythm and he's repeating that delivery, he looks like a guy that could be a middle rotation starter. I think there'll be some balance back and forth because at times he can get out of that rhythm. But I still think this is a really good four starter and a guy that has the upside to be a middle rotation arm if he can, you know, maintain this stuff. And if the command looks like it has over the last, you know, 2 months.
Yeah, no, he is going. That's why they had the third start already in there on Savanta. He is going tonight. I forgot about that. And as we speak right now, I mean, it is 8:40 on the East Coast. That game is top four. He did allow three runs in the first, but he settled down after that. Only two of those earned, three strikeouts and 12 whiffs through the first three innings going up against Joe Boyle. So that's a pretty fun little pitching matchup there on Sunday night. But yeah, no, when I saw Early, I want to say it was, I'd have to look at my notes. I think it was like early June, late May, something like that. You know, he was fine. Like I didn't think he was bad by any means, but it was like the changeup really impressed me. And I was like, all right, the fastball's all right. Breaking balls are all right. Like those didn't really stand out, but you know, from what we've seen in the first couple outings here, he looks, you know, the breaking balls look better than what they were earlier this year. You know, the fastball, I mean, it doesn't blow you away with velocity, but you can mention the good movement profile. You know, he can tunnel well. There's a lot to like here, and I agree. Like, I still like Peyton Tolley better long-term, even though he's had his rough kind of couple of outings here after that great start. But I still think Tolley's like the more upside arm long-term. But, yeah, early could he settled in that 3-4 range, you know, be more of a high-floor guy with some upside, too. I'm not saying there's any upside, but it's not like astronomical upside like you mentioned. But, yeah, I think there's a really good, you know, overall profile here. And even back when I saw him, even though I wasn't blown away earlier in the year, I was like, all right, this guy is a major league starter. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Like, I don't think there's much reliever risk here. Like, this is a good major league starter. So, yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty viable arm moving forward. And this next guy, though, keep it right in the AL East, go up to Toronto with Trey Yesavage. I mean, got, you know, a little roughed up today. It wasn't terrible, but not as good as his first outing was. 4 runs and 4 innings today after that first outing against Tampa Bay earlier in the week. 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts. One of the 2 strikeouts today came on a absolutely devastating splitter that made Jack Caglione look like a rookie ball player. But, you know, rest of the game didn't go so well for Yesavage. But that's kind of what I saw from him. You know, I saw him a few times in Double A. Like the stuff, I love the stuff. That splitter is, I think, already one of the best splitters in baseball. But the reason why I didn't have him quite as high as I think most prospect rankers did, even though I did have him, you know, pretty high in general, was this inconsistent command and control that I saw. You know, we saw a little bit of a higher walk rate from him this year. Didn't always hit his spots, which got him in trouble. But when he does hit his spots, when everything's clicking for him, he is, you know, one of the most exciting young arms in the game. So what have you seen, Aram, from, you know, Trey Yesavage in his first couple outings? And, you know, how high do you think this guy can rise moving forward?
Well, I think the first two are like a perfect example of what you can get, right? Where I think when he is locating, he's really, really, it's similar to the Connolly early conversation of the way the arsenal kind of works off of itself. I think Yesavage may be as good of an example as you have because it's the highest release in Major League Baseball. And then off of that, it's a fastball that still has good carry from that high release. And then a splitter and gyro slider that work down off of that. So I think with the splitter and gyro slider, it's like he's dropping it out of the sky because it's really going to exacerbate that vertical drop. And then having a fastball that still has that good ride from still a high release point, I think it really creates, again, that kind of nightmare tunnel there. And when he's setting it up, like there's specific at-bats I remember where in the Rays game against lefties, start the fastball like belt high away. Maybe that's fouled off or taken for a strike. And then you have a splitter starting in the same spot and either diving right below that or fading to the arm side away. And there's nothing they can do. But also, how do you lay off of that? Because if it's a fastball again, you don't want to take that for strike two. So being able to set everything up the way that he did in that game one, I think really stood out to me. But then you also see what happens when he has to start pitching from behind a little bit if he's not filling up the zone. It's a good fastball, but if you find yourself in an advantage count as a hitter against Yesavage, all of a sudden you can start cheating for that fastball a little bit. It's not elite, right? It's 94, right? 95. It'll grab a little bit more and it gets decent carry. But if you're in a fastball count, you know he's going to go to it when you're ahead 2/3 of the time. It's kind of that example there where we start to see him get hit a little bit harder. And maybe that'll be a matter of finding more confidence in the secondaries. It points to erase those hitters counts. Maybe it's just getting ahead more consistently. I think that's probably the thing to look out for. But I still think all in all, it's been a step in the right direction command-wise, but it has been a bit sporadic, right? We've seen stretches where he's walked 3 or 4, but then we've seen stretches where he walks 1 or 2. So that just seems to be the final variable between him being a 4 starter, I think, and, you know, a really high-end 3, or maybe, you know, even a little bit more than that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I saw from him. I saw him twice this year, and I forget if it was the first outing or the second outing, but he was absolutely just cruising through the first 3. Like, I think he had like 1 hit, maybe had 1 walk. It was like 5-6 Ks, just cruising. And then that 4th inning, just everything came unraveled. He was just getting like single, walk, double. It was all of a sudden he gave up 4 runs, and I think he got pulled and didn't make it out of the 4th after cruising through the first 3. So kind of showed, like, even within that one outing, like the good and the bad with Treya Savage. But yeah, like that splitter, like I said, it is an absolutely nasty splitter. And I agree, it's a good but not great fastball. I think it's good enough. But I think the real X factor here with him is when his slider is working, and it can be an above average slider too. Just, you know, with him, it's, again, goes back to inconsistency, you know, throughout all of his offerings. The one that's only really consistently is the splitter. Like the other two, four seamer, slider, he kind of comes and goes with, but when everything, all three of those are working for him, he can be, I think he could even be a two at that point in time. But I think you're going to see some inconsistencies from him. He'll show you huge upside, but then he'll show you, like today, where it kind of can all go wrong for him. Give up a couple home runs, give up a few walks in four innings, and all of a sudden he's out of the game. So, I love you, Savage. A lot of upside there, and been an astronomical rise, even though he was a, you know, top 20 overall pick last year. But, you know, just becoming one of the, you know, top pitching prospects in the game this year. So a lot of excitement there moving forward. For Treya Savage, without question. Now we go over to the New York Mets, who just keep bringing up good pitching prospects every few weeks, it seems like, with Nolan McLean, Jonah Tong, and now Brandon Sproat all debuting within, what, like 6 weeks or so since McLean got his debut back in early August or whatever it was. That's pretty exciting to have three, you know, top, what, 15 or so pitching prospects all debut for one team in that short of a time. So that's really exciting. If you're a Mets fan, three starts so far with the Mets for Sproat, who was a second round pick back in 2023, up and down year in the minor leagues this year, but was definitely more up than down recently before his promotion up to the Mets. First two outings got quality starts in those, not so much in the third outing, but overall seven earned runs allowed, 13 hits, six walks with 15 strikeouts in 16 innings, faced the Reds, Rangers, and Nationals so far. So what have you made of Sproat this year? I'm like, again, it's been a pretty up and down year for him. But obviously he was one of the, I think some people had him as like a top 10 or close to a pitching prospect entering the season. So there was a lot of hype there with how he'd pitched the last couple of years. So where are you at on him at this point, and what type of arm can you expect him to be moving forward?
I was really, really excited about him at the tail end of last year. I mean, where you're seeing, I think similar to what he has kind of regained now, which was the improved command. And through those first three big league starts, I mean, you've seen the command just be better than it's been really all year long. I think that's the part that has really stood out to me. The feel for the secondaries has just totally been there. But what really stood out to me in the second half of last year was that feel for the two different fastballs. He's got the four seamer buzz at the top. The shape was never great on that, but it's still upper 90s. So when you can change those eye levels to 10, 15% of the time, it's still going to be blown by hitters who are looking down. And then that sinker now is still playing a little bit better now that he's locating it. And that pitch gets him plenty of ground balls. So being able to locate those two, I think, has been huge for him, because shape wise, it's not the best. And then that changeup of his, that when he had found it in the second half of last year, somewhat of a similar splinker type of action to it, that I think it's not going to be anything close to what Skeens can throw, but the shape isn't that far off when he was right in the second half last year. Then it kind of disappeared on him. I think a lot of that was the AAA ball. I've talked to a lot of pitchers about it. I think it's affected different guys in different ways, but the consistent theme I've gotten from guys is that the ball is a lot different. And so I think for Sproat, a guy that was making strides as, you know, with his command, who also was making some strides in terms of the characteristics on his fastball, giving those up a little bit in AAA was an adjustment period for him. And I think it took a little bit longer than expected to get back around there, but it did also ease the transition to the major leagues. So I think that's the interesting part of it, is you've got some of the learning curve that probably would have been had in the major leagues, kind of had in AAA this past year. Cause I think most of the time Sproat's biggest competitor, I guess the biggest thing for Sproat to overcome is himself with the command. So seeing him fill up the zone the way that he has, I think, has been really encouraging. He's going to get the whiff when he needs to, and I think he's going to continue to get better at generating the whiff and being able to get the ground balls the way that he can too. Like, that's a big part of his game, and I think takes some of the pressure off of needing to strike out as many guys. But seeing the sweeper back to where, you know, you want it to be, being able to throw in that curveball as well, the changeup back as well, you know, I'd like to see the four-seamer command be better, but still overall I feel like it's everything you could have wanted out of Sproat in his big league debut of, you know, these first three starts. And I know the third start was a little bit less exciting, but I mean, most of these guys that we're talking about here, they kind of had that third start come to earth moment. And I think that generally happens in Major League Baseball, no matter whether you're facing the Nationals or the Yankees or whoever.
Oh, yeah. I think we've seen it with like a lot of the rookie arms over the last couple of months. Like, I remember like Mizorowski was like, and Burns were looking dominant. And well, Burns had a couple of outings, I think at the start that weren't great, but you know, Mizorowski had like dominant starts and then he ran to a little bit of a wall. You know, same with, you know, Peyton Tolley had a great debut, then he hit a wall. It's just part of being a rookie. I mean, that's just and the gap from AAA to the major leagues is no joke. I mean, especially for, you know, it's these days where I think the gap is bigger than it ever has been before. So I just always never know how these guys are going to transition to the major leagues, no matter how talented they are. But yeah, Sproat, I mean, he's a guy that I think I had as a top 10 or at least top 15 prospect end of last year, and during this year kind of fell a bit. He fell out of my top 100 overall, but it definitely been encouraging after he made a little bit of a mechanical change. He moved where he kind of started on the rubber, went more to the first base side, and that seemed to really help him over the last, 2 months ago or so that was. So I don't like it as much as Tong or McLean, but I think Sproat could be like a really solid like number four type guy, and maybe number three, but I don't think he'll really need to be a number three for that Mets team. Yeah, definitely some excitement here with Brandon Sproat. So we've had a lot of nice pitching prospect debuts over the last several weeks. We've been really, really spoiled with that. No question about it. Now let's go over to the hitting side here with the powerful Bryce Eldridge of the San Francisco Giants. Still only 20 years old. He won't turn 21 for about another month, 20th of October. He'll be 21, so can't even legally drink yet, but already in the major leagues. Still waiting for that first home run, but it's only a matter of time before this guy powers one out. He had 25 home runs in 102 games in the minor leagues this year. Most of those were with AAA Sacramento, where he had 18 home runs in 66 games. You know, and I think everyone that's, you know, paid attention to the minor leagues knows the power with Eldridge is off the charts and can transcend any ballpark, even, you know, what is it called now? What is the park in San Fran called now? Is it
no.
It's not AT&T, Oracle? Right? Oh, it's Oracle now. Yeah, I can't keep track of some of these ballpark names anymore. They keep changing so often. Yeah, Oracle, thank you. This is a guy that, you know, could even, I think, be a 30 homer bat in Oracle, but there are some issues with contact, with the strikeouts. Like, you look at what he did in AAA. Yeah, like the quality of contact was phenomenal. It was 63.5% hard hit rate, average EV close to 96 miles an hour, but he had a contact rate below 67% and a K rate around 30%. So what do you make of Eldridge? So obviously a lot of good there, but some red flags in the profile. How do you balance that? And you know, what do you see from him moving forward?
Yeah, I think patience. And I know in the prospect world, that's not usually a word that's
What's that word?
Yeah, not really utilized a ton. And, but you know, I think if you're a Giants fan, you're looking at Eldridge and you're saying, oh man, I'm really excited about what he can be. But I think you have to probably embrace the fact that it may not even happen in the first couple seasons. It's not to say that he won't be a good, you know, maybe serviceable player, but I do think it's going to take a guy like Bryce Eldridge 500, 600, 700 at bats till he's really starting to settle in and turn that elite raw power into elite game power or close to it, you know. But the thing is when you have that kind of impact, and I mean, it's, you mentioned the average EV in AAA. I mean, that's going to put you, if you're able to match anything close to that at the major league level, it's going to put you in the 1% and maybe within the 1% there, right? So yeah, you can't teach that side of things. And when you're able to hit the ball that hard, that consistently, your margin for error is a lot wider. And I think that's where you can get away with, okay, the contact may not be that frequent, but when he's making contact, it's a high probability. The ex-Wobicon is going to be really high for a guy like him. But
yeah,
I think this is where the swing decisions come in. It's not bad. It's not great. I think for a guy like him, he really needs to be selective. And I think he really needs to be able to draw walks at better than a 9% clip, which is what he's done this year between AAA and the big leagues. I think, or between the minor leagues and the big leagues. So I think that's the big thing there for him as he continues to develop. But I always liken the 6'7", 20-year-old or just young hitters to like a baby draft and just kind of learning on how to move in like with cohesiveness, like cohesion to his, just his mechanics. I think repeating his moves. I think just continuing to have the timing down. Like there's times where he's just super tardy. Like he's still just kind of learning how to consistently get that best swing off. I think he will. But I think it'll take some time. And if it means he's striking out 32 or 33% of the time the first year or two, like, I think he'll slug enough to justify keeping him in the lineup. But I do think it's going to be a little bit of a process with him.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I mean, again, the power, it's absolutely massive. I think he can be one of the best power hitters in the game in time. But we got to remember, like, even though he's in the major leagues right now, he's still 20 years old. And I believe he's now, was it the youngest or second youngest player in the major leagues right now? So still a long way to go with him. I mean, he was just drafted 2 years ago out of high school. So that's really a huge rise, you know, to get from high school to the pros in under 2 years, or right around, or a little over 2 years, I should say, actually, but like 2 years and 2 months or so. But yeah, he might be hitting 220, 230 to start, you know, next year, probably not going to be more than that. But long term, and maybe he's only a 250 or so guy long term, but with the amount of impact he has, if he can get at least up to that 240, 250 range, again, I think it's a 30 plus homer bats. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, I think that's true, you know, what I like to call big boy power here with Eldridge. So he could be like a middle of the order guy. He maybe hit like fourth, fifth or so in that lineup, you know, right behind Devers or so. So I think they could be a really fearsome, you know, lefty duo there for San Fran moving forward. So yeah, I'm agree. You got to give him patience. You know, these types of guys, these big lumbering sluggers like Spencer Jones, you know, has a lot of the same issues, you know, not quite the same, but similar issues in certain areas. So, and he'll be a guy that's going to be wide, you know, wide array of potential outcomes right off the bat with him once he's up next year. But yeah, Eldridge, I think, is going to be fine long term. Not the greatest average guy, probably not even a super high OBP, but the power is going to be absolutely just transcending. So, got to love that at least. Next up here, Rafael Flores with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Was with the Yankees for a few years, you know, debuted back in complex level of 2022 with them, and then went over via trade this year to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now he's up with the big club. Overall this year, 133 games between AA and AAA. Pretty solid year. 280, 354, 470 slash line, you know, and those 576 plate appearances. 22 home runs, 27 doubles as well, drove in 88 runs. It's a pretty solid year for Flores in the upper minors. You know, Pittsburgh is starving for bats. I mean, this is a guy that probably wouldn't get a chance on a lot of MLB orgs right now, but Pittsburgh kind of wide open in a lot of areas. And, you know, Flores, pretty solid prospect, not as highly ranked as a, you know, Bryce Eldridge, obviously, but definitely has some upside in his own right. So, what do you think here on Rafael Flores, Aram?
I think given the catching situation now in Pittsburgh, he's a guy that's probably going to take the lead there. I think beyond that, even with the bat, as you mentioned, how starved they are for offense, could be a guy that ends up taking those reps at first base too, with maybe Spencer Horwitz. Say they don't want him facing a lefty, whatever it may be. So I think it's a guy that if he's performing the way that he is capable of, can be in that lineup most every day. And there's not a lot of guys in his way. Now it's, okay, what's the production going to look like? I think there's going to be swing and miss. I think he is going to skew towards the three true outcomes, but the swing decisions are great. I think that's a big part that takes the pressure off of the hit tool. I think the swing decisions are great. He hits the ball in the air pretty consistently, and the exit velocities are above average. Now I'd like to see him have more consistent quality of contact against secondaries. He crushes fastballs, and that's probably the next layer to his game. Or it's something where he kind of stalls out at, and at the end of the day, he's a great fastball hitter. He hits mistakes. He doesn't chase. And at catcher, that's still going to be more than enough production because he's turned himself into a pretty decent defender back there. So I think it's going to be a matter of how good he can, you know, hit against some of these secondary offerings. But I think once you can hit fastballs well, hanging breaking balls, and you don't chase, and you make good swing decisions overall, I think you're going to make a living, especially at a position like catcher. But I do think there's a chance for him to be able to push to 20, 25 home runs and be a little bit more well-rounded if it all works out. But I like the floor here, and I think that's a big reason why the Pirates were excited to acquire him, is he's a good chance of being at least an average catcher.
Yeah, no, and they've seemed to really struggle finding, you know, that catcher. And you know, Joey Bart, he's been okay. Henry Davis has been fine, but neither one of those two guys have really screamed like, all right, this is our dude for the future behind the plate. And maybe Flores isn't even that guy, but I think like you mentioned, he has that possibility to, you know, take some of the reps there, take some of those reps at first base, and you won't get any DH, at least not this year with Kutch there. But, you know, long term, maybe he's kind of like playing those three spots a little bit, keeps him in the lineup, you know, more often than not. And, you know, I don't love the bat with Flores. Like there are some, you know, contact rates have not been the best, both in zone and overall. Not terrible, but, you know, definitely, you know, fall under below average. But like you mentioned, Aram, you know, swing decisions are pretty solid there. There's some pop. So, you know, maybe he's not, you know, top 10 catcher long term or anything like that. But I think there's a decent bat in here with a decent chance to kind of run with the close to everyday role. Like, he, again, I don't think he'd be getting this role on a lot of other teams right now, but Pittsburgh really needs any spark they can get in this lineup. We know they've kind of been figuring out the pitching side for the most part, but the offense, I mean, I think this is one of the worst offenses we've seen, at least in my lifetime, worst team offense we've seen. I don't know how they stack up all time. I'm sure there's several other teams that are way worse than them back in the day, but yeah, one of the worst offenses we've seen in a bit. So I think he'll give Flores some reps here. He hasn't played in a few days, but I think you'll see him get some more starts here to close out the season. Last name here before we hop over to some Marlins talk, Zach Cole with the Houston Astros. I hit another home run today. So he's up to 3 home runs so far. You know, 3 runs or 4 runs scored, 6 hits, or no, 7 hits in his first, 6 games so far. So pretty exciting start for him so far. 261, 346, 522 slash line. It should be 9 games, not 6 games. But nice start. 3 home runs already. Got to like that. And this is a guy that had some pretty solid numbers this year in AAA and AA. Most of it in AA, but the last, you know, 3 weeks were in AAA. He had 5 home runs, 3 steals in just 15 AAA games. Overall, 19 home runs, 18 steals in 97 games. You know, hit 279, 377 OBP, 539 slug, 12.5% walk rate. That all looks great. And then I mentioned the 35% strikeout rate, which is definitely a bit of a red flag there. So, a lot of good here. Not a guy that gets ranked super high, Aram, but a lot of fun skills, but also that one glaring red flag. So, what do you make of Zach Cole here?
Yeah, this is like the microwave type of player I like to call him, because when you've got an EV90 of 110 miles per hour, I mean, you've already got some power that is difficult to teach, and it helps that he's pretty patient. But at the same time, you know, when we were updating the Astro system, this was not a guy that I was really high on, just because you see that strikeout rate at 35% in the minor leagues. It's pretty unprecedented to have success at the major league level. And it reminds me, like, the game reminds me a little bit of like Sam Hilliard, where you can get this guy up there and he could have a scorching couple weeks and really jolt your team. But then there's going to be stretches where he's just striking out so much you can't justify keeping him in the lineup. Now, what I am hopeful with Zach Cole is that I think the swing decisions are a little bit better. Maybe there's something that clicks for him at the big league level where, you know, he's able to make a little bit more contact. At least the underlying whiff isn't completely egregious within the zone, but outside of the zone, it's pretty bad. So he's not going to really spoil much. It's kind of the one swing for one spot kind of thing, but the juice is so ridiculous. The speed is there and it's a decent glove that he could be a solid bench player or, you know, end up on hot streaks playing his way into a larger platoon role. I just don't think he's going to be able to hit enough.
Yeah, that's been my question with him too. And, you know, he's a little bit older, but, you know, there's a lot of good skills here. But I've seen, and I'm sure, you know, we've all seen a lot of these guys that might have an exciting, you know, blend of tools, but that one issue of too much swing and miss, not making enough contact, can really just make it so the other tools just go away or aren't, you know, maximized to their full potential. And you look at what he did in the minor leagues this year, outside of that high strikeout rate, had a contact rate overall in the, you know, mid 60% range. Zone wasn't terrible, but overall contact, you know, was pretty bad. So yeah, I think Hilliard, that's actually a really good comp right there. I like that a lot, because Hilliard was, I loved Hilliard coming up. He's actually one of the prospects that, you know, as you know, to Aram, doing this like I do, there's some guys that you might be high on in the past, then something goes wrong and you realize, oh yeah, I should have seen that. So it kind of makes you rethink or kind of like adjust how you might see things, how you evaluate things. And Hilliard was one of those guys for me, definitely helped my, you know, get my own personal evaluation a little bit better. So Zach Cole, pretty fun. I'm sure he'll get some run here. He already is with Houston and the season. They've been really trying to mix and match in that outfield. You know, they haven't really been finding, you know, a lot of guys that can stick there. They've had some injuries as well. You know, Cam Smith has really fallen off, but we'll see who gets the starting spots next year. But yeah, Cole, fun guy, but I agree. I don't see him being an everyday starter just because unless he can clean up that swing and miss to a good extent, which is easier said than done. For sure. I mean, we say that, like, oh yeah, if he just gets the contact rate up like 7%, like that is not an easy thing to do. Like, it's easy for us to say sitting here at our desk, but not easy for a Major League Baseball player to do.
Based on hundreds of millions of real world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All right, let's go over to some Miami Marlins talk here. You know, the Marlins not going to make the postseason this year, but they're starting to get some good young talent here. We'll start with Jacob Marcy, who has cooled off a little bit of late, but really one of the more exciting players over the second half of the season so far. 210 plate appearances, 5 home runs, 12 steals, 319, 386, 527 slash line. And when he popped the hood, some pretty solid metrics under the hood as well. And, you know, this is a guy that I remember ranking pretty highly a couple years ago. I want to say it was like late 23 into early 24, I think was when he was like peak prospect value back when he was with the Padres. And then 2024 wasn't, you know, a great year for him. This year was all right, but not enough to like rebuild that lost value. But now he's, you know, everyone's favorite darling here in the second half of the season. So are you believing in what we've seen from Marcy? Do you think he's a high impact player moving forward? What do you think here?
Yeah, so it's funny because if you put him on his 162 game pace, I think he's an MVP candidate. So
right.
I'd imagine probably not that. I think the 162 game pace, last I checked, he was on like almost 8 WAR, like 80 extra base hits, like just ridiculous stuff. So I would say there's going to be a normalization period, but it's actually great timing that we talk about this because I went to, based out of South Florida, so I went to the ballpark about a week ago to sit down and talk to him. And I wanted to just hear, how did you go from, you know, hitting below the Mendoza line in the Southern League, which is a hard place to hit, but not harder than the major leagues, then to what you're doing right now in the major leagues and even what he was doing in the early part of this year in AAA. And actually, I think it'll be out tomorrow on justbaseball.com, a conversation and some video breakdown and just what he has changed mechanically and mentally to kind of make that leap. And then having that conversation, because I did see the mechanical adjustments that he's made, But then in hearing the conversation and some of the reasons behind why he made those changes, and being a guy that like acknowledged that he's a little bit of a stiffer mover and simplifying those moves and finding the right bat path, like he trained the crap out of his bat path all year, his setup, being able to accommodate that better bat path. This is a guy that's an explosive athlete. He was a good football player in high school. He's really strong, but his average exit velocity last year was 83 miles per hour. And it was like, why is that happening? I am too strong. I am too talented to be hitting the ball that gently. And I think that was something that was a big focus for him. And is his bat speed off the charts? No, but he's still a strong enough guy that I think now that he's finding the barrel more, I think you're saying like an average exit velocity this year at the big league level of nearly 90 miles per hour. I don't think that's entirely sustainable, but I think it's going to be comfortably above what it was last year. And I think if he's hovering anywhere north of 86 miles per hour and normalizing, you know, anywhere from 87 to 88 miles per hour with his swing decisions, with his bat to ball skills and the improved just path overall, I feel like this is a guy that's just going to be a really solid player for a long time. And that's all the Marlins really need for him to be the everyday center fielder. The defense looks like it's solid out there. He's an asset on the base paths. I think ultimately he settles in as more of a, you know, 275 guy that walks at a good clip and can mix in 15 homers and a bunch of doubles, and it just all comes together. He's kind of a sum of his parts guy. And be that 3.5 win player for you. And I think it's obviously a really, really good player. I think there might be an adjustment period. But I do think that this game that he has, you know, created now, and the guy that he has become, is not by, you know, just random happening. I think it's something that he really did hone in on that really clicked for him. And remember, we watched this guy, you know, have a huge year, as you mentioned. We watched him win the Arizona Fall League MVP. The talent has been there. It's just trying to get that back and get back into it. And he said to me a lot of things that were working for him in that Arizona Fall League MVP year just weren't working for him in Double A. And for the first time in his life, he faced adversity and had to make some changes. And now I think those changes have actually made him the best version of himself.
Yes. It's almost like a blessing in disguise that he ran into that wall. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'll definitely check that out. That interview with him. I kind of agree. I think like when I looked at Marcy's profile, it just looked like a 15 homer, 30 steal guy that hits for good average, decent OBP. Like not a stud, not a star, but just a really, you know, solid above average player. Yeah, really solid above average player. He's still 24 years old, and you know, there's a lot of good under the hood. Like you mentioned, the, you know, quality of contact gains this year. He's up to a 44% hard hit rate. I feel like he was down to sub 30% hard hit rate last year in AAA. But you know, it's above average contact, both in zone and overall. You know, chase rates are only 18.5%. And another positive thing that I don't think is talked about enough with him is he hits really all pitch types well. I mean, he's hitting above 280. I know it's like a huge sample size, but you know, it's 210 plate appearances. That's not like a super small sample size either. He's hitting above 280 against fastballs, breaking balls, and off speed, slug of 500 or higher against all three pitch types as well. So really no like glaring red flags here. Again, that might not be a stud, but you know, there's a decent ball player here and a 15-30 guy, good average, good OBP, you know, probably gonna stick in that top third of the order for the Marlins moving forward, you know, with a pretty, I think they could have a decent lineup. I like Ramirez a lot too. So I think this could be a lineup on the rise over the next couple of years, and Marcy be right in the middle of that. So yeah, like, I don't think, again, don't expect this moving forward, but there's definitely a lot of good skills here with Jacob Marcy, no question about it. Over to the pitching side now, Sandy Alcantara. I mean, obviously, former Cy Young caliber pitcher, had a down 2023, missed 2024. And this year, we've kind of seen, you know, flashes of the old Sandy. There was like, I think I got 4 or 5 start stretch where I was like, oh, he's back. And then, you know, then you see the valley come after the peak. It's a 5.48 ERA right now in 30 starts, 1.28 WHIP, and 167 2/3 innings. So we've seen, you know, a lot of good, a lot of bad this year from Sandy. You know, fastball velo is still really good. Still, you know, right what it was in 2023, right on 97.5, 98 miles an hour with that four seam and that sinker. You know, still got a pretty good changeup, mixes in a couple breaking balls, curveball, and slider as well. Curveball is something kind of new to him. He didn't really throw it much in 2023. Now he's throwing it 18% of the time. But, you know, I don't know. It's hard to, for me, you know, like I said, we've seen flashes of it. So, like, I know that old Sandy is still in there. And this is, you know, first year back after major injury, you know, shaking off the rust, all of that. So what have you seen? You know, obviously you cover that team. You're down there. You see the Marlins more than most people that listen or that cover baseball. So what have you thought from Sandy this year? And do you think he can get back to the Sandy of old?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about that, where I wonder if he, even no variables, no injury, whatever, was ever really going to ever match that unanimous Cy Young season. I think as a ground ball guy, you look at the history of the award, how many guys have won the Cy Young, especially unanimously, with his strikeout rates. And there's not a lot of precedent there. And I don't say that to take anything away. I just think that you have to have a lot of balls bounce the right way in addition to being consistent and incredible for a whole year. And that's exactly how it went. So I think there was always going to be a little bit of give from that spot, but then we saw a lot of give as he came back from injury, because just he could not find that release point. And that was something that I know that they were working really hard on, and kind of just where his elbow was at. I think at times it felt like he was kind of pushing it forward, and that was really affecting the changeup. And then he was leaving the changeup up, and that was the pitch in his Cy Young year, that it wasn't just the fact that the changeup was a good swing and miss pitch. It was the fact that the changeup was pretty much his get out of jail free card. It's that 91, 92 mile an hour changeup, sometimes up to 94, that in a 2-0 count, you might even be sitting it, but it's almost like a phenomenal sinker in a way that you can take even more off of, to where you're just going to ground out. But it was lacked a little bit of the fade that he had in the past. It was firmer, and the command of it was just way worse through the first handful of starts this year, and I really through the first half of the season. And that's why we saw, I think, what kind of made his identity of as a pitcher just kind of taken from him, and then trying to find that again. That's where he starts throwing this curveball all the time. And he's a pronator. He's not a supinator. So as much as he's able to still throw some decent sliders and decent curveballs, like, that's just not who he is. And he was trying to pitch like somebody else to get by, and it was just creating those volatile results. Last seven starts, his changeup strike rate 75%. The chase rate's nearly 50% on that, which means he's starting it right where you want to start it, and he's getting guys to swing right where he wants them to swing it at. The sinker's back. He's spotting with that. And then now those slider and curveball, the two breaking balls that he had to rely on more in the past, now utilizing them a little bit less, they're actually more effective for him. So I see the huge shift command-wise, and I think he's back to the guy that was one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball, at least in the respect that, like, he can do a lot of the same things. I think the game also may adjust to him a little bit. That's a guy that you're going to make try to bring the ball up a little bit more. And that's why I think he's more of a low 3 ZRA guy at his best than like a low mid twos like he was in a Cy Young season. But in his last seven starts, he's a 2.70 ERA. Underlying still really likes him. And I think moving forward, he looks like a guy that can pitch to a 3 ERA and eat innings for you. And I think it's hard to argue against, you know, what he's been able to do over the last handful of starts, because even when he doesn't fully have it, he's back to like look at the start against the Phillies, 6 innings. He only struck out 4. He gave up 4 runs, but he got through 6 innings. And I think that's something that is kind of back in his game, where even when he's off, he's still going to give you a chance to win. And he wasn't doing that early in the season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I said, we've seen the ups and downs from Sandy. And like you mentioned right now, he's on an upswing right now. So I'm hoping that, you know, this end of the season, you know, surge for him can carry over into 2026, because he was one of my favorite pitchers to watch. I've always really enjoyed, especially like he feels almost a bit old school at this point, where like not many guys are guys that you like, all right, there's a good chance Sandy's going 7-8 innings today. Like, you don't usually get that with a lot of arms these days. We know a lot of guys are going more like 5 or 6 as opposed to 7 or 8 innings now. But now that we're seeing, you know, Sandy get further and further removed from injury, you know, like his last, you know, let's see, his last 6 outings here, 6 2/3, 7-6, 7-7, 7. And he hasn't gone under 5 since his last start in May against the Padres. So just, again, getting back to that innings eating way that we're kind of used to with him. You know, swing and miss stuff, which was never like huge, but it's down, like whiff rate's down, zone contact rate's up. But yeah, I think you see a much better 2026 from Sandy. Maybe not. I agree. Maybe not back to Cy Young caliber, but I think there's still a really good, really high floor, you know, workhorse arm in here. Still only 30 years old, which is, you know, still pretty young for pitchers these days. So yeah, definitely excited to see what Sandy can do, you know, kind of build off this strong end of the season and into 2026. Another guy that I'm obviously, I mean, everyone's obviously excited about this guy, but Yuri Perez, you know, another guy coming off a missed 2024 season. And that really, I mean, it's never, you know, never a great time to have a, you know, miss a year. But man, after his insanely good 2023 rookie season, when he had a 3.15 ERA in 19 starts, 113 whip, 29% strikeout rate, with three pitches with a 45% whiff rate or higher, the slider, curveball, and changeup. Like, the only other guy that I think has done that over the last few years is like Blake Snell and maybe one or two others. So for a rookie to do that, that was incredibly exciting. And this year, again, kind of what I was saying about Sandy, you've seen the old Yuri, you've seen him shake off the rust, you've seen a young arm. He's still 22 years old, which is just crazy that he's already had a full rookie year, miss a year, had a third full year, and he's still 22 years old. But 4.20 ERA this year. Whip's actually better this year. It's a 1.04 whip. xERA is actually a full run lower at 3.39, 24.5% K rate, walk rate right around 8%, which is where it was in that debut season back in 2023. So what are your thoughts on how you've seen Yuri this year? And do you still think, Aram, that, you know, you still have Yuri on that, you know, trajectory that he could be, you know, a Cy Young caliber, you know, ace, one of the best arms in the game? Do you think that that upside, that future is still there for Yuri?
Yeah, I think he's got a little ways to go, but I think it would be crazy to put a ceiling on this kid, right? I mean, you mentioned what he was able to do at such a young age. I'll never forget catching him live on the backfield till like 18 years old and just realizing, okay, this kid's different. And then at each level, that's just a sentiment that just continued to be echoed. It's just, he's different. And not just physically, like mentally. He's the exact type of player that could get that fast track that we hadn't really seen, especially in the Marlins org, really since Jose Fernandez. And then you have the Tommy John surgery, and you imagine, again, this is a kid that has not really faced any adversity in his professional career. And so all of a sudden has a couple bumpy starts, and also just still trying to feel that same throw that he had before. And that's where I think it's fascinating, because that fastball is elite. I mean, in terms of run value, and there's a couple starts here and there where he'll get roughed up because it's the major leagues. And if you're falling behind, and it's kind of similar to the Savage conversation, where if you're falling behind and it's hitters counts, like they'll ambush and they'll still be able to clip good fastballs or even elite fastballs like Yuri's is. But when he's locating that thing, I mean, it's one of the best fastballs from a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. And the crazy part to me, and why I think he can achieve that ceiling if it all comes together, is that, you know, you're seeing him survive and turn in a pretty good season right now. First year off of TJ at 22 years old. And one of his better pitches, when I've seen him be dialed in, is completely unusable this year, which is his changeup. Like he keeps throwing it because he might as well, because you're trying to work towards, you know, getting to a point where you've got everything back and you can be the best of your abilities next year. But that changeup, man, like he's got like a 25% strike rate on it. He just has no feel for it this year. And that just seems to be the pitch that's really lagged from the Tommy John surgery. And then, you know, you've really just only seen him throw the slider. Otherwise, like, you used to see the curveball a little bit more. That pitch hasn't been thrown as much. So he's been very fastball slider heavy while throwing a changeup 10% of the time that has almost no shot of being a strike. And he's still been successful. So maybe he stalls out and he stays in, you know, more of that volatile in a way that where you see sometimes frontline guy, sometimes middle rotation guy. Or what I think is more likely here is over the next few hundred innings, as he continues to throw and learn his body and also learn his new body after the surgery, that changeup feel comes back, that curveball feel comes back, and all of a sudden, you know, he's got four plus pitches potentially with the feel to locate all of them. And you know, from a 6'7" starter, and you've got this monster on your hands with one of the best fastballs. It's only gonna make his fastball better too. So I think that's what you have to dream on, but it's going to be really fun to see how he comes back, you know, a full year removed from his Tommy John return.
Yeah. This has been, you know, a pretty encouraging year, I think. I mean, you look at the ERA being over four, but again, XERA 3.39, still has over a strikeout per inning, whip is barely over one. So there's still a lot of good here with Yuri as well. And the fact that he's still doing that while shaking off the rust, like this is still, again, very young arm coming back from major surgery. Like you mentioned, he hasn't really faced any adversity. Like we talked about with other arms here and other players, like we talked about with Marcy, he hasn't really had that adversity year until last year. And really this year, kind of an extension of that, you got to work back from the missed year. So that he's still, you know, his flash, like we've seen some outings where you're like, oh man, there's that 2023 Yuri back in action here. And you know, it's still some pretty good metrics overall on most of his pitches here. I mean, he's got his four most used offerings, all of a slug allowed under 400. And the four-seamer, as you mentioned, one of the best in the game, both in terms of velocity, and I think it's like 99th percentile for spin rate as well, under a 200 batting average against on the four-seamer. So, yeah, I think next year you're going to see him take that next step back to being one of the better arms in all of baseball. And it's going to be really, really exciting to see. You know, still only 22 years old, 23 next year. I think he still has a chance to be one of the very best pitchers in this game for sure. Next arm here, Ryan Weathers. A bit of an up and down year from him as well. A lot of excitement on him entering this year. You know, had a pretty good 2024, 3.63 ERA, 1.18 WHIP in 16 starts. Then he came in spring training. He was throwing harder than he ever has before. I mean, last year average four-seam velocity was 95.9. In the spring, he was like 97, 98. This year, overall, he's averaging 97. So that's something that has stuck throughout the year. But I forget what the injury was, but he missed the first like 6 weeks of the season. Then he had a few starts in May here. He had three starts in May, two in June. Then he missed 3 months, came back in mid-September. He's made two starts since coming back. So overall, it's only seven starts spread out over, you know, 5 months. 3.21 ERA, 1.22 WHIP. 29 strikeouts in 33 2/3 innings. So we've still seen some of the excitement that was there, you know, back in spring training. It's still there, and he still had a pretty good year when healthy in limited innings. So what do you think on Ryan Weathers here moving forward? Like, what do you think, you know, how high do you think he can, you know, rise? Like, you think he's a number two, number three, number four? Where do you see from Weathers here, who's still only 25 years old?
Yeah, it's very health dependent, right? I mean, yeah, I think flexor issue and then the shoulder / lat thing. I think that after an uptick is a little bit concerning. But you know, there's a guy that focused on getting his body into a better place and it came back this year. I mean, you average everything this season between the minor league rehab outings and the big leagues. And he's averaging 97 on that fastball and with better characteristics. I mean, getting some really good carry to it at points too. Then the changeup's been there, and it only made the changeup better. And then he added this sweeper that has just been a disgusting pitch for him as well. So just that trio of offerings screams middle rotation to me. It's just a matter of being able to stay healthy and stay available, and that's the variable that unfortunately is the most impossible to predict. But I think we've seen, though, he was a very popular breakout candidate, and understandably so. Got to see him throw a few times spring training too, and it was just tangibly different how good the fastball was. And then you saw him in the first few outings, even after the delayed start, as you alluded to, and it was five innings of one run ball against the Cubs in Chicago, then against the Cubs again at home. Remember, in May, they were one of the best offenses in baseball, period. Five innings of one run ball again against them, and just turned in a couple other really good starts this year. I think if he can stay healthy, that fastball is a plus pitch. That changeup looks like he can play, you know, like a plus pitch, and the sweeper looks like he can play like an above average pitch. So it seems like middle rotation stuff if he can stay healthy. And I know the Marlins are very excited about him. We're very excited about him going into this year. And just unfortunately, it just couldn't stay on the mound.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of those guys where I love the upside with Weathers. You mentioned the new look Weathers this year overall in terms of the velocity, the pitch mix. And you know, this year has been primarily four seam changeup sweeper, but the changeup 43% whiff rate on that. Sweeper has a batting average against of 176 and a 32% whiff rate, even the slider 37% whiff rate, though he only uses that about 5% of the time. So a guy that really gives you, you know, three different velocity bands as well. Four seamer in the upper 90s now, mid to upper 90s, change up in the upper 80s, sweepers more like 83, 84, 85 in that range, slider up in the upper 80s as well. So, yeah, really excited about Weathers. I was one of those guys that was like buying in. I was drinking the Kool-Aid back in, you know, February, March, and seeing those early velocity readings from him. So I was like, all right, this is a guy that could really pop this year. And, you know, that's been delayed a year. I mean, we're not getting the full pop this year, but hopefully he can stay healthy in 2026. Maybe we get that full-on breakout from Ryan Weathers. So really excited about him. Last name here, we'll dip down to the minor leagues here, Triple-A. Kemp Alderman has been absolutely beasting out in Triple-A. Got the bump to the level on the last day of August from Double-A, and has just been hitting nonstop since getting up to Triple-A Jacksonville. The Jumbo Shrimp, who have one of my favorite minor league team names in all of baseball. That's a great mascot too. But in 19 games, 81 plate appearances, 293, 333, 653 slash line, 13 extra base hits, 7 home runs, and 5 walks as well. I'd even throw in a couple steals for good measure. Now, overall this season, between AA and AAA, 22 home runs, 22 steals. You know, kind of a sneaky, you know, stolen base guy this year, though I don't think that's going to carry over to the major leagues, but it's been kind of fun to see. With a 283, 336, 478 slash line in 129 games between the two levels. So he's a, you know, very exciting end to the season here. This is a guy I remember, like, there was a lot of excitement around Alderman's power, you know, back when he was drafted a couple years ago, but it was like, all right, the power's there. What's the rest of the profile look like? But he's really starting to show that, you know, this could be a decent major league power bat. Still with some issues with the contact rates not being super great, but not like a, you know, super high strikeout rate either. Here it's 23.2% this year. That's not terrible. So starting to get some excitement around Kemp Alderman. Do you think it's justified, Arm?
It's justified, you know, relative to where it was at before, because I found myself a little bit skeptical, right? It's like, okay, he hits the ball really hard, but if it's infrequent and it's on the ground when it is, you know, when he is making contact, how much does that necessarily matter? But then you see what he's done really over the last couple months, and especially since he got to AAA, and it has been tangibly different, right? I mean, you look at a guy in his last 30 games, that ground ball rate's 44%. You go to the 100 games before that, it's a 54% ground ball rate. And so you could say, okay, well, I'll side with the larger sample, and fair enough. But it is a trend here, at least as he's playing at the most challenging level of his career. I think it's extremely encouraging. He just turned 23 years old. I think there's clearly been a little bit of an adjustment here to be able to get the ball in the air. And even if you split it up a bit more evenly, right? Like the last 70 games, it's a 47% ground ball rate versus the 60 games prior, it's a 57% ground ball rate. With his exit velocities, if he's anywhere just south, I think, of 50%, it's going to turn into a lot of hits and a lot of extra base hits. And then it's just a matter of, okay, what's the average launch angle on his hard hit baseballs? And before, you know, I think you look at the first 70 games or so, that number was about 6 degrees. So all of his 95 pluses are going on average at about a 6 degree launch angle. Even just a couple ticks better, if he's up to 9-10%, which is what he's been at, you know, in the subsequent 60 so games, it's going to make a huge difference in the home run output, you know, perspective. And that's exactly what we've seen, where he's just been slugging way more. I mean, we've seen him hit home runs opposite field, 470 feet at 114 miles per hour. Like, you just can't teach that stuff. So I am interested to see, like, I was very skeptical that he would be able to tap into it nearly frequently enough. Now I think he's showing that he can tap into it frequently enough to fill a big league role, but is he going to be tapping into this elite raw power enough to be a potential plus big league power bat or fill a short platoon role? And that's the thing I'm still trying to figure out now. And, you know, I want a little bit of a larger sample, but it went from, will he fill a role, to more of what I think is, what role will he fill? And the thing with these guys though, is when it clicks, like, no matter what, you're going to be wrong, right? Because if it fully clicks for him, an EV 90 of 111 miles per hour would put him, you know, among the top sluggers in Major League Baseball. So if it fully clicks for him, he could be one of the better mashers in baseball. But you'd be kind of crazy to project that, because he still has a lot of things he needs to shore up with his game. But, you know, if you try to sit somewhere in the middle, it feels like you're going to be wrong no matter what. But I do think he can land still somewhere in the middle, because of the fact that the quality of contact's so good, and he makes enough contact The other thing I'd like to just see, maybe to try to trim one other variable working against him, would be those swing decisions. It's about a 30% chase rate on the year. He's cut that down a little bit as the years progress, but if that's something that if he could get that closer to 25%, then I think you could start to feel a little bit better about, you know, just rounding out the edges to that profile.
Yeah, I think you said it really well, because I had a lot of those similar skepticism about, you know, will this guy hit enough to, you know, maximize that power, or even, you know, close to maximize that power. And like I said, those concerns haven't been fully erased, so they've turned it in the right direction, absolutely. But he's still a below average contact rate guy in general. But we've seen, you know, these huge, you know, quality of contact guys, they don't need to have, like, you know, great contact rates. It obviously would be lovely to see that, but you know, you could see like a 68, 69, 70% contact rate guy with huge power make it work. We've seen that countless times before. And I think Kemp Alderman could get to that range. I'm with you. It's still kind of up in the air. You know, maybe he gets a role here in 2026. Currently, corner outfielders are Heriberto Hernandez and Troy Johnston, who both have some solid upside on their own right. And, you know, Hernandez especially has been pretty solid this year. So, but those guys are not like locked in. I think Marcy obviously is pretty locked in center field, but you could absolutely see, you know, Alderman maybe pushed for one of those corner outfield roles, or maybe the DH spot, which has kind of been like a hodgepodge of guys. You know, Liam Hicks has been in there, you know, a little bit, Graham Pauly a little bit too. So I wonder to see if he gets a role here in 2026, because you look at the QOC in AAA, 61% hard hit rate, 95 mile an hour average EV, and a 15% barrel rate. That's pretty darn close to the same metrics that Bryce Eldridge had. So obviously I'm not comparing the two, and one's 3-4 years older than the other, but it just shows you like the level of power he has is really, really exciting. So yeah, all right, that's gonna wrap us up though. Aram, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you. And what do you guys got going on over at Just Baseball?
Yeah, just the Marcy piece coming out, which I'm excited for people to check out. It was a fun conversation with him, and then continuing to update all of the team top prospect lists. So excited about that whole project. Then maybe an end of season top 100 update as well. But of course, we got you covered on the postseason and everything going on there on the Just Baseball Show and the Arizona Fall League, and wrapping up all the minor league stuff on the Call Up, our prospect podcast. So yeah, would love for y'all to check it out. But thank you so much, Eric, for having me on, man. Always a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, and highly recommend checking out everything Aram does, everything Just Baseball does. A lot of great stuff over there, both, you know, on the MLB side and the prospect side as well. So highly recommended. Check out all of that stuff over at justbaseball.com, and I'll be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry, because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead, making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.